Welcome to the New Gamer Nation podcast. I am your host, Pilot, and I have with me today Slacker.
Hey.
And special guests, the Obnoxious Gamer.
Hello.
And Trevor.
Hello.
All right, so let's start things out as we usually do with what we are playing. So why don't you get into it, Slacker? What are you up to?
No good. But other than that, I am playing, still playing God of War 2. I'm pretty close to the end, at least I think I am. Basically, I'm at the part where just after you fight Icarus and you take his wings and you're in like an underworld, like there's a little underworld level. So that's where I am right now. And, you know, so far, so good. Very enjoyable.
All right. So so how much time have you put in since last time we spoke?
Probably about another hour, hour and a half. You know, I haven't really been playing that as much. But, you know, I've primarily playing Dragon Quest IV, which, you know, it's nostalgic. It's you know, basically, see, you know, we had this talk about, I guess, remaking games. And, see, I feel like in this case, it's a decent remake because the original is just like, you know, just the way the game was developed, it's pretty tough to play in its old form. And so it kind of brings the game into the present day here and now, and it opens a new generation to it.
Well, do you think that by changing a game that was so 8-bit influenced, right, like that came out on the NES or SNES?
Yeah, you're talking like 1980s.
Yeah, so I mean, the graphics are so 8-bit old school kind of style. Do you think that coming out with a game with a new coat of paint and, you know, 3D models and things like that change what the game was all about or how the game plays?
Well, I mean, it's still the same game at heart. It's still the same game at heart, same plot, basically same events happen to progress the story. So it's still the same game at heart. And, I mean, me personally, I'm a fan of, you know, the anime art style. And the game has, like, you know, an anime art style, which I think is interesting. And, you know, they do a couple other things, too, to keep you interested. Like, they keep the battle scenes animated and just basically a couple different things with the colors and the characters, the art style.
So what else have you been up to?
That's basically been it. You know, just I've kind of dropped Uncharted for the time being. It's just basically been God of War 2 and Dragon Quest 4.
Are you planning to go back to Uncharted sometime soon?
Sometime soon. Sometime very soon, hopefully. You know, just yeah, it's an enjoyable game. I mean, you know, I enjoy exploring the 3D environments, and it's to the point where it's almost like an interactive movie. I really enjoy the story. I really enjoy the gameplay. It's just like, you know, with everything else, it kind of gets pushed down a little bit.
So what about you, Trevor? What have you been up to?
Well, last week I had basically spent the whole week going retro, playing Resident Evil 2 and a bunch of old PlayStation games. And I decided to go online and buy a few games for my new original Xbox that I recently bought. I bought Black. I bought Jade Empire, and while I've been waiting for those to come in, because I bought them all from Amazon, it's taken a while, a lot longer than I thought it would, I decided I would peruse the OnLive service, and I've been playing a couple games on there. I actually signed up for their playback bundle. It's $9.95 a month, and I get access to over 78 games. So I've pretty much been playing Flat Out 2, which is kind of an awesome derby style, you know, wreck the other guy, blow him up to get points. Style nice. Race game. I've been playing that with my nephew. He's more concerned with crash him, blow him up than actually winning the race, because there is actually a racing component to it too, not just destroying the other guy. So we've been doing the career on that. We've been doing the derby mode, which is, you know, everybody's in a circle and it's basically just a Mexican standoff. And you just go flying at each other in total mayhem. So I've been doing that. Sean White skateboarding. I'm not like a crazy like Tony Hawk skateboarding type gamer. But I saw Sean White. I knew he was an awesome snowboarder. I knew he was an awesome skateboarder. I thought, you know, why not just try out the game and see if it's cool? And it actually has like a really weird futuristic world where like the government is, they're total fascist. They've outlawed skateboarding. They've outlawed emotion. And it's called the whole world is being called New Harmony. It's the nation of New Harmony, and everything's black and white. And it's basically your job to spread color through the civilization and break down the walls of, you know, the anti-skateboarders and the anti-thought and you're like fighting the thought police the whole time. So it's just like that weird, what's that Christian Bale movie I'm thinking of?
Equilibrium,
where everybody's taking a pill, Prozium or something.
Yeah.
It basically like that, but you're the anti-pill in that game. So it's kind of like a fun spin on a skateboarding game.
So you're enjoying the story mode, it sounds like.
I'm enjoying the story. It's cool doing the ollies and the, you know, the 360s and the tricks, the grinding. There's a lot of grinding in the game. Yeah, I'm really enjoying like the odd backstory to it all. Like it almost seems unnecessary for a
right.
skateboarding game to have, like they already have Shaun White. They have his name. They have his lookalike. Like his lookalike is actually arrested by the government in the beginning and they treat him like he's the number one enemy of the state terrorist. And it's like plastered on all the huge TVs. Like, we have caught Shaun White. Like, you're like one of his minions trying to, you know, spread this virus of freedom. And it's just so weird that somebody was sitting around and thinking, hey, let's do a Shaun White game, but make it really weird. And like, they might have been high when they thought of this, but it's just a really cool original idea for a game. And what's funny is the reason I bought it was it was on sale. I got it for $3.50 on OnLive, $3.50.
Cool. Well, it sounds like it's very over the top, and it's like even though it's kind of, even though it's very over the top, you're still enjoying it because plots. I mean, I was a big fan of the old SSX series. I had SSX Tricky and SSX 3, and like it's like the idea of a plot in like a snowboarding game seems kind of out there, but it seems like you're really enjoying it.
Yeah, just imagine snowboarding at gunpoint or snowboarding at like the dictators. There's a dictator watching you. Like, you know, it's like a really weird, because you could imagine a world where the government stamped out everything, that skateboarding, a form of expression and of individualism, would be one of the first things that they would stamp out. It's actually, not to get too deep, but it's actually something that communities are fighting with every single day. You know, no skateboarders on school grounds and no skateboarders here. And the skateboarders are always kind of like fighting the man. So I think that's probably where if this was Shaun White's idea. But, you know, I've been playing a couple other things on there and it's just, there's 78 games. It's crazy. Prince of Persia, three of the Tomb Raider games, you know, Underworld, Anniversary, The Legend. It's just like I just have so many different games to sink my teeth into and try that I'm not going to play all of them, but I definitely have the opportunity now. And it's open to me for just $10 a month. It's really a great, great deal.
So what else have you been up to?
I don't want to talk about it, but I think I'm forced to talk about it because I wrote it down.
We won't judge you.
All right. I started playing Duke Nukem again.
It's okay. Let it all out.
It was very enjoyable. I'm gonna cry a little bit. I'm a little flaclemt. But no, I got to the hive scene where you go down into the hive and there's a bunch of naked women down there. And I'm not saying that's the reason I liked it, but it's just like those two annoying girls that you had at the beginning of the game, they get killed and the aliens are using the girls to breed, I guess. And it's just, it was actually relatively enjoyable. Him opening up doors, the doors looked like a certain orifice of the human body that I won't say, and he would tickle the orifice to open the door and say like open up, and it was disgusting but hilarious at the same time. So I'm awkwardly enjoying Duke Nukem. So I think my problem a few weeks ago was that I just hadn't gotten far enough into it.
Wow, I'm shocked.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what to say.
So am I. I'm verklempt.
All right, well, if you say so. All right, well, let's just go over to you, OG. What have you been up to?
Little bit. I recently got an iPhone, so I've been tricking
that.
Sorry?
You've been assimilated?
Yes. Just got back from my honeymoon. It's amazing. No, it's been great. I never thought that I'd be the kind to play mobile games, but I drank the Kool-Aid on that recently.
Very nice. So what have you played as far as that goes?
There's this claw game. I think it's just called Game Claw. I don't really know what it's called, but it's just basically like pick a bunch of prizes and, you know, you're just like, oh, whatever, I'll give this 5 minutes. And then the next thing you know, it's like 3 hours later and stop.
So do you feel like you're cheating on your games with these mobile games?
A little bit. Naughty Bear had to sort of like punch me in the face and, like, bring me back to it. I have also been playing that.
Sounds inappropriate, naughty bear.
Yeah, it's just like, it's kind of one of those games where you have to get medals, version of the medal you rank up, so that's why I've been playing it for a while, but it's just like, crazy bear who isn't invited to a party, and he deals with it by murdering people.
Completely healthy.
Oh, yeah like, normal. Natural reaction.
Normal behavior.
Yeah, for sure. That's how I've been spending my time.
So are you playing the DLC for Naughty Bear, or still on the regular disc?
Still on the regular disc. I'm not really good with time challenges. I like to really sort of make the bears go crazy.
Gotcha.
Kill themselves, which is probably a lot of detail, but gets a lot of points. And I'm committed to point gathering. But with the time trial, you don't get that. You just have to basically go through it in like 4 minutes.
Now, with those time trials, do you have to do that for trophies?
Well, you do them for medals, and then different medals unlock different levels, basically. And different costumes, which help you do better.
Gotcha. So, anything else to talk about?
No. Started playing a little bit of Fallout, but not too much of it.
Have you played Fallout before, or is this new?
No, this is actually my fifth time playing it.
She's only played it a couple times, you know.
I only like it a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. Add-on, or whatever you call it, extension are you on?
Oh, I just started.
Expansion. Oh, you just started from the very beginning. Do you have the expansions installed already?
Yeah, well, I'm playing the Game of the Year edition again, which comes with it comes with all the DLC and everything.
Oh, you're playing Fallout 3.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I should clarify.
Oh, I thought you were talking about New Vegas. Fallout 3 is awesome. That has great replay value. I've played that at least 3 times now.
Yeah, I really like it.
So have you played the DLC before, or is this going to be like a new venture?
Nope, this is also round 5.
Oh, so you played through all the DLC and the game itself?
Yeah, I don't know what it is about this game. I just really enjoy how I can honestly say that this is the fifth time playing through, and I'm still finding like interesting things, which is it's cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of Easter eggs in there too.
That's the thing. Like, I keep finding new like bits and pieces to sort of explore and junk.
So, have you played New Vegas yet or no?
Yeah. I need to replay that because I have to. It glitched on me. Shocking, but I wasn't able to recruit that Veronica girl.
Oh, okay.
She's not worth it.
No, I know she's not, but
she's part of the Brotherhood of Steel, so if you do anything against the Brotherhood, she starts attacking you.
Oh, that explains a lot, because I
had her with me when I started killing Brotherhood of Steel, and she's like, "You monster," and she started attacking me.
Whatever, kill her.
I think I did kill her. If actually, a little pointer for you, if you wait long enough, the Caesar's Legion actually invades the whatever that interchange is called, Interchange 188 or whatever, and they kill everybody there anyway, and Veronica dies.
Oh, interesting.
So there you go.
Not that I would ever plan somebody's murder. Ridiculous.
Well, that's how a lot of the game is. See, the game is very fluid, and if you don't do things within certain time, people die, and basically things go on without you, so it has a real, you know, realistic edge to it.
I found
that the companions in New Vegas were pretty weak in general. You know, they died at like the drop of a hat.
Yeah, they can.
I'm trying to remember which one I used. I know I had the dog in New Vegas, but I can't remember. I had the guy who was formerly a part of the Legion, and you know, he was the doctor. I can't remember his name. His name is Barry or something. I can't remember. But I had him, and then the guy before that was really good. But yeah, really, you don't, it's not cut and dry. Like the first Fallout 3, I had Sharon from the Underworld, and I pretty much had him the entire game. And one of the other games, I had Fox from Raven Rock. So it's really cut and dry to know who to use. But in New Vegas, you're right. There's quite a few of them, and it's hard to choose which is which. And they actually determine certain missions. You need them to do certain missions. And I found that extremely annoying.
Yeah, I just found that they died really easily. I mean, I chose Fox in the beginning of Fallout 3, and he just dominated by the end of the game. I mean, he would take, like, Deathclaw strikes to the face. Like, it didn't matter what happened to Fox. He was going to survive and kill whatever was hitting him.
Yeah, I should have picked that guy. I always pick Star Paladin Cross, and that woman.
God, why would you pick her? Sharon
She's still drunk. She picked
Sharon from Underworld.
No. Pick Fox. Yeah, pick Fox.
I have to stay good though. That's my problem.
You could be good with Fox.
No, I was too.
I'm usually bad in the Fallout games.
Yeah.
Just keep your karma up, and you'll be able to pick him up, and then he's gonna dominate and destroy everybody.
I got stuck with Star Paladin Cross, and she picked a fight with Deathclaws who hadn't even seen us, and I let her die.
Yeah, you see, Fox picks fights with two Deathclaws and wins.
That's the way to go.
And then you don't get anything. You just get to loot the bodies, but you know what? It's worth it. So, all right, let me go and talk a little bit about what I've been up to, which hasn't been an awful lot this week since it was a busy week for me. But I did play more Assassin's Creed Brotherhood multiplayer. It's a very good multiplayer mode for those that don't know. It's pretty interesting. It's definitely a different take on things, and I've been enjoying it quite a bit. But so,
can I interrupt you for a minute? Now, you seem to have a negative opinion of Assassin's Creed multiplayer, am I right?
Yeah, I think it's pretty useless. No offense.
So, but now, what about it did you like, or what about it didn't you like?
I just think it's kind of unnecessary to the gameplay experience. I mean, you're going around, you're this, you know, super cool assassin doing super cool stuff, and you have to, like, basically, like, chase down, like, a bunch of, you know, what I imagine to be 11-year-olds, which is by the name of, like, their gamer tags, do all these, like, it's kind of ridiculous. Like,
so is it,
Joe,
is it,
did you feel it was unnecessary?
It really depends on how you look at it. I mean, is any multiplayer really necessary for the story? Generally not.
Unless it's co-op.
Yeah, well, I mean, co-op is one thing, but I'm just talking multiplayer in general. I mean, most multiplayer, you know, modes have nothing to do with the story. Except for, like, one game, which doesn't even have a story. So, you know, most of the time, your multiplayer modes are just add-ons to fool around with characters that you encounter during the single player.
Oh, yeah. Like, sometimes they do have a value. Call of Duty multiplayer, obviously. Yeah. Even in games like Naughty Bear, there's nobody ever on that server, so I don't think I can ever get that trophy, which is frustrating because I like trophies. You know, like, I kind of feel like eventually Assassin's Creed would sort of follow that same path.
Yeah, it probably will. I mean, but that's the fate of most of the games that come out today.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. At some point or another, they're going to close the servers and you're not going to play multiplayer anymore, which is part of the reason why I despise multiplayer trophies to begin with. But, you know, as far as here and now, you know, a different multiplayer experience other than a Call of Duty or, you know, that kind of a first-person shooter multiplayer session, I think Assassin's Creed Brotherhood is going to give you something different. And, you know, it may not be for everybody, but I think that those that enjoy multiplayer and you've been playing your Call of Duties and you're looking for a change of pace, this is a good change of pace.
This is true. That's a good point.
But, I mean, as far as, like, relevance to Assassin's Creed storyline or the game itself, it has none. I mean, I just started playing the multiplayer now because I obviously want to get the platinum trophy for that game. So I'm trying to grind out all the multiplayer trophies so I can hit up that game at my convenience and have the fate in my own hands.
That's a good
idea. Especially with Revelations coming out soon, there's not going to be many more people playing Brotherhood.
Right, that's true, actually.
So that's why I'm trying to get it all in now, because there's 40 hours of grinding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it takes a long time to get up to level 50. So, so I've been playing that. I've also been playing Total War Shogun 2, which is pretty awesome. I like that game quite a bit, especially for those people that are Civilization fans. This is a good game.
Also, how is it different from Civilization?
Well, it really focuses around combat rather than city building, because Civilization is more about city building, where Shogun kind of focuses on combat. And, you know, you just take control of armies and you can construct your armies however you want, you know, down to the individual. So, you know, you can have 100 pikemen and, you know, a bunch of cavalry and some archers and this and that, and construct your army as you want it, and then, you know, put it off to battle. And there's some castle sieging in there too, which is pretty cool. And it also does the overview, where you have to conquer other cities and things like that. But you don't have control over building a city or not. I mean, you're just taking over provinces, and every province has a capital city. So you take over the capital city, and now you own that province. But there's, like, a lot of different factors that come into play. There's, like, a whole economic system and the, you know, different relations with different clans and stuff. It's really cool, really intricate. You know, definitely can get you as deep as you want as far as a strategy game is concerned. So it's been a lot of fun. And a little bit of Civilization 5 as usual, and that pretty much does it for me. Let's move on to the first segment of the podcast, where we'll talk a little bit about the greatest video game heroes and villains. Everybody's got an opinion, so let's just jump right into it. And why don't you hit the highlights, Slacker?
I mean, for me, you know, greatest video game villain, I mean, two that come to mind. I think of Shao Kahn from Mortal Kombat, and I also think of Sephiroth. And so I'll start with Shao Kahn. What I really like about him is just he's not only does he have like this just brutal selection of moves, he, you know, just beats, not only does he beat you up, but I mean, like, the whole time he's like taunting you, he's, you know, oh, that's all you got, and like, you know, he's just really just, he's tough, he's got brutal moves, and he taunts you. And I just thought that, to me, that that was kind of the epitome of what a good villain is.
So he was taunting the player itself? Like, did that break the fourth wall, so to speak?
Yeah, like, it really made it personal. Like, he's taunting you personally. Like, he'll laugh at you and say, oh, is that your best? That all you got? And, he'll, you know, he calls you a fool. He, you know, says you're pathetic. Like, it not only is he beating you up, he's demoralizing you.
Oh, so he wasn't, like, this, you know, making fun of you, the player. He's just making fun of your character.
Right, like, it's generic taunts. It's generic taunts. And, oh. And that, to me, that kind of, like, you know, he's, like, rubbing salt in the wound. And that kind of was like, you're a jerk. So, and additionally, I thought that Sephiroth was from Final Fantasy VII, was a very good villain as well. Just really, you know, with the usual villains, it's kind of like it's take over the world, you know, unlimited power, this and that. But, you know, with Sephiroth, he just kind of seemed concerned with global destruction. Like, there was no satiating him. All he wanted to do was just basically bring an end to the world.
Also, then, how does that, well, what about that made you choose him over some other character bent on destroying the world?
Well, I think part of it is the, because in Final Fantasy VII, Sephiroth kills Aeris, who is a central character in the game. So, mm-hmm. like, you know, you play about, like, 12, 13, 15 hours into the game, and Sephiroth just kills her. And then, like, I wasn't really used to that with RPGs at that point, where they introduce a character and you start, you know, the story starts to progress. You kind of go, oh, okay, hey. And then all of a sudden they just, you know, kill off a central character. And that kind of made me legitimize him a little bit. Like, I actually had like a little bit of a hatred for him because he killed a central character in the game.
All right. So what about some of your favorite heroes?
Well, one that stands out, I really like Nathan Drake in Uncharted because, you know, he's very witty. Like, you know, just it sort of draws me in. It, you know, witty heroes kind of draw me into the story a little bit. And he's always got like a smart aleck comeback for something somebody says. And he's just, you know, he's very gutsy, you know, just kind of just boldly leaps into the unknown and, you know, doesn't mind looking, leaping before he looks.
Yeah, no, that's a good pick. I certainly can't argue with that. So what about you, OG? What about some of your favorite heroes?
Favorite heroes? I have about three of them. Kratos, Ezio, and, of course, Batman.
All right, so what is it about Kratos that you find particularly appealing?
He gets things done, you know? Like, he has a problem, and he doesn't really stand around being all like, hey, I should gather this team, or let me sync up with these teammates, or... You know, I'm going to have a big strategy about this. No, he just goes and he gets it done.
He cuts right to the chase?
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty interesting choice because Kratos kind of straddles the boundary between a hero and, like, a villain.
That's true, actually.
Because you kind of see him as a hero from your perspective, like, especially in the beginning when, you know, he's just taking on all the gods that have done him wrong. But as you move through the story, he becomes like this ruthless, you know, angry war god.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you take on a different perspective of, you know, somebody just, you know, praying to the gods and he just comes down and kills you, like, it's a pretty, he becomes like this crazy villain.
I guess that's true, but then I sort of see it as like, well, maybe, you know, going back to your previous point of karma, like maybe they just did stuff that wasn't right. He was fixing the balance in the universe.
Yeah, no, it's certainly one of those flawed Greek heroes, you know, that are always guilty of hubris.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, I don't think everything he does is the greatest response to a situation. You know, like when that guy was like begging for his help in hell, and Kratos was like, "No, I don't think so." That was a little harsh. I, you know, probably would have rethought that one.
You mean ripping guys' arms off isn't a constructive way to solve conflicts?
Well, I think he was just like in a really angry place.
An angry place.
He just needed
a little misunderstood.
A little bit. Like, he should just like, deep breath, gonna go for a coffee. I'll come back and deal with this.
I feel like we're getting a lot of demons out. This is a good session.
This is very therapeutic.
So what about Ezio that was appealing to you?
He's just kind of charming, you know, that like, I don't know, he just like, I just really like how he, again, solves his conflicts. You know, his family was murdered, so he sort of systematically goes after people, and sort of takes down this entire family, you know, controlling family of Italy or whatever.
Interesting. Another interesting choice. And, you know, I'm sure you can guess why you like Batman.
Yeah, he, you know, uses his brains to do things and doesn't really have any superpowers, but he has all these, like, gadgets and gizmos and a really nice car.
Ah, that's what it is.
I'm a sucker for a shiny car, I'll admit.
And he's also the most nonviolent of the group, too.
That's true. Actually, I actually really like that about him, that he sort of, like...
He doesn't kill anybody.
Yeah, like, you know, in real life, he's like, well, I'm going to tie you up and wait for the police to come get you.
True.
Doesn't really want a criminal record, I guess. We can all sort of sympathize with that, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, so before we get into your villains, we're going to go and take a break. So stick with us, and we will be back soon. Why don't we just go right and pick up where we left off with your picks for villains. So take it away, OG.
Okay, well, I guess the first pick I would have for a villain is Bowser, which many people are familiar with. The evil turtle who is a thorn in Mario's side.
Hmm.
Next would be Sub-Zero, mainly because of the whole ice power thing. That's a little terrifying.
Well, is that well? Why would you consider Sub-Zero a villain?
Because he is a villain.
I beg to differ. I beg to differ.
Yeah, I don't think that he's necessarily a villain.
He was my favorite character. I used him all the time.
I love him too, but I don't think he's a hero.
I thought he shot out Ice of Justice.
Okay. I'm gonna try and respond to that seriously and not. No. You know, he always had that sort of like upper hand on people, you know, and that voice was all like, finish him. Sub-Zero was like, I'm going to do that job. And he did every time.
Yeah, but it was Scorpion that killed Sub-Zero's clan. Oh. And he's just trying to get revenge on Scorpion.
He also killed a lot of people in the process. Like, unnecessarily killed people.
Well, he's not a hero, but, you know.
Ah, he's not a hero, but he's a villain then.
It's sort of interesting that most of OG's choices, be it hero or villain, are kind of like blurring the line a little bit.
Like be in real life. Crazy. No, right. I'm joking.
It's just a blurry line, huh?
If the government hears this.
if there's anything I ever said to make you angry, I take it back. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I go to church and pay taxes, vote. I do all of these things. Good citizen.
All right.
Yeah, I guess the last thing would be the Wendigo, whatever that thing's name was in Wolverine.
Okay.
Terrifying.
In the Wolverine, the movie?
No, in the Wolverine X-Men Origins game.
Wow, like, you played that?
I love that game.
I didn't know that was even circulated.
It was circulated.
I'm kidding. It's just the movie was so terrible. I didn't realize they made a game.
Oh, I didn't watch the movie. I didn't watch the movie. I just
don't. If you love the game, don't watch the movie.
I really like X-Men, so whenever there's an X-Men game that comes out, I'm usually down to play it.
All right, so why don't you continue with your picks, Trevor? What do you think about it?
Well, I really enjoy more in-depth heroes, people that we like to call anti-heroes. They do good things. They're the protagonists. They're, you know, seeking out the truth. But in the process of seeking out the truth, they may incidentally kill people. They may incidentally be the cause of the problem or not be helping very much. Or maybe they may have even caused it. First hero that I thought of was Isaac Clarke from Dead Space. He's basically thrown into a horrible predicament where he has to survive essentially a virus outbreak. And he ends up losing his mind in the process and going completely insane, and he's not sure what's real and what's not. So he's not just your cut and dry, you know, just full, like, this is the right thing to do. The guy really has no idea what's going on. He's just trying to escape with his life. First game, he's trying to save his girlfriend, who's actually dead, and he's just seeing her. And the second game, sort of a continuation of that. So he's conflicted, and I like that conflicted person, because that's more realistic, like we were talking about real life. And I find that a hero would crack under pressure. A hero would not be able to deal with problems so perfectly, like Mario. You know, the guy gets up every day and puts on his little red suit and goes out and jumps down the pipes and doesn't give a crap. But Isaac would be absolutely terrified of jumping that pipe, because he knows there's a necromorph down there ready to kill him. So it's a little bit different there. Next one I thought of was Alex Mercer from Prototype, which is really, I don't know how many people play Prototype. It's a really good game on the Xbox and a couple other systems. And basically, Alex Mercer is a walking virus. And everywhere he goes, the virus is spreading and mutating throughout the entire city and killing people. But he's the hero. He's trying to stop and kill the hive that's causing the virus. But at the same time, he's spreading it. So again, you have that undeniable conflict within the hero, who doesn't really know that he is the cause of the problem. And I really just got a kick out of that. It's like, don't go there, Alex. You're just going to spread it there. And he did. He went there and he killed thousands of more people. And the thing about the game is it's a sandbox game, so there's just chaos everywhere. And you're pretty much free to go anywhere in the city that you want. And it's just absolute madness. As the virus is spreading, people are being ripped apart around you. They're getting bit and then getting back up and then attacking other people. And then it's sort of like a Resident Evil-esque type game. And it's just crazy. And the final hero that I thought of was the age-old hero that I grew up with, Dr. Gordon Freeman, who, by putting the unknown material into the cascade resonator, or whatever they called it, he basically opened up a wormhole that brought aliens to Earth and, you know, occupied and took over the entire planet. So, again, he caused the problem, but throughout the entire series, through all the games, he is slowly defeating the aliens and sort of rectifying the wrong that he originally made. And he's more of the perfect hero, but you can beat scientists to death with crowbars, and you can kill Barney, the security guard. So you sort of have that option to be bad, too, so you're not a perfect hero. So that's my list of heroes.
Well, certainly interesting choices. What did you think on the villain side?
The villain side, I'm a big Resident Evil fan, so obviously Albert Wesker came up. Again, he's someone sort of cloaked in darkness. You don't really know what his involvement is. And throughout the series, you slowly learn more and more how involved he is in the series. I'm not as fascinated with him as I am with maybe a couple other people from Resident Evil. From Code Veronica, you had the cross-dressing Alexandria, who turned out to be her brother, and then their crazy father, who's locked in the basement, Neferatu, who's just this crazy creature that haunts you and chases you, and Nemesis. You know, there's another one from Resident Evil. So Resident Evil is just full of these pure villains that you can't really put your finger on. They're just brutally killing, not caring. Albert Wesker, for instance, in the movies, I don't really like the Resident Evil movies, but he's just ruthless. And to any end, he'll do horrible things to people. So he's really your pure villain. And I thought of Frank Fontaine. Again, this is sort of like the anti-hero meets anti-villain. he starts out in the beginning of the game as someone you want to help. He's pretending to be like this Irish worker whose family is stuck in a submarine, but he's really just this twisted, crazy old man trying to get back at Andrew Ryan. And you basically, the whole game, you're doing his bidding while thinking he's this friendly father who's just trying to save his family. And he's actually the bad guy. He is pulling all the strings. He's evil. He controls the entire facility. And, yeah, really the quintessential bad guy. Because you didn't know he was bad and turned out to be bad in the end. So those are the villains that I thought of.
Interesting. Interesting choices. All right, so I'll go quickly over the heroes that I chose. I particularly like Cole from Infamous, who you can play either way. You can play him as a good character or a bad character. But I think no matter how you play him, he still has a sense of good about him, where, you know, he's trying to learn about what's happening to him as well as what's, you know, plaguing the city in general, and, you know, taking on the people that, you know, are working for the bad guy. So, I mean, even when you're bad, you're still kind of good. He's just a really interesting character in general. Especially when he came from just being a normal person. He was just a delivery boy. And then all of these events unfolded around him that made him into something a lot more than that. So I found him particularly intriguing. I'd also chose Link from the Legend of Zelda series, who's just more or less your straight up perfect hero. You know, go and save the world, save the girl, go do what you gotta do, adventure, treasure, the whole thing.
You know, so what made you choose Link?
Well, because he is the prototypical hero. And, you know, even, I mean, maybe he's more nostalgic than anything else, but, you know, it's hard to look away from something like that. You know, he doesn't have to have all these thrills and sexy automobiles or anything like that. I mean, he just runs in there and takes on whatever comes his way. And does what he feels.
There's sort of a classic quality to it, to Link. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. It's just so stereotypically hero that he becomes one of the better heroes for me, at least. I also chose Commander Shepard from Mass Effect 2. I'm a big fan of Shepard in general. He's almost reckless to a point where he just feels like he's got to take on whatever it is, no matter what's stacked up against him. And he's willing to do it alone, which is even crazier. And it's actually what got him killed to begin with. You know, just going in there, guns blazing, you got to get this done. And I don't care what we have to do it. And, you know, it's kind of cool. Lastly, I chose Dante Alighieri from Dante's Inferno. I mean, granted, not everybody loved Dante's Inferno, but I thought that, you know, Dante was a great hero, literally going through the depths of hell to save the girl that he loved. And, you know, even as he's moving further and further down into hell, he sees, you know, glimpses of the one that he loves. And she just gets more and more corrupted by, you know, Satan himself. And then after you defeat Satan, then she starts moving up through purgatory and you continue to follow her up through there. So it's a really cool story, and I liked it quite a bit. It had that, again, a classical element to it that made it particularly fun to play, at least for me. But I think even more notorious than the heroes are some of the villains, such as GLaDOS from Portal. And in my opinion, GLaDOS is one of the best villains of all time. And I mean, she has like such, but she's not as evil as you would expect like the best villain in the world to be right away. You know, you start out and you kind of see her as just a narrator, somebody that's kind of helping you through the tests. But, you know, you soon uncover that there's a lot more sinister, you know, motivations behind all the things that she's making you do. And by the end, you see that she's just been manipulative the whole time. And GLaDOS doesn't have, like, arms and legs or the ability to stalk you in the night. But she's able to be manipulative and to make you do whatever she wants you to do without having to take it by force. And I think that's the most intriguing part of it. And I think it's most true to life, too. I mean, I'm sure there was plenty of people that sat down to dinner with Saddam Hussein and he didn't murder them right there on the spot. You know, like he was more sinister in that respect. And I think GLaDOS kind of has that sinister quality that makes her, like, just intriguing. I also chose Jigsaw from the Saw video games. I'm a big Saw fan, and again, I like the intellectual, you know, stalking of the heroes rather than, like, the physical altercations. And, you know, I think Jigsaw kind of does that, you know, constantly setting traps and making you work through problems and things like that. I think, and, you know, he kind of lets you think that he has a good side, but then as soon as you do something bad and you get on his bad side, you know, you learn exactly what his true intentions are and how evil he really could be, you know, especially all under the false pretenses of teaching you a lesson.
Yes, see, I was going to ask about that. I mean, you know, see, I've watched the movies, but I've never played the game. I'm curious what you mean by Jigsaw giving you good intentions. I mean, because in the movies, at least, it never really seemed to me like he had good intentions.
Well, the game is similar to the movies. I don't really think there's much of a differentiation there. But, you know, Jigsaw always would, the people that he would put into the traps, he would always give them a way to overcome the trap. You know, it may not be the most pleasant or easy way to get the answer to the trap, but the end product was you being able to overcome his, you know, symbolic struggle, whatever you had. Like, so if you were, you know, a drug addict or something, he would make you, you know, do crazy amounts of drugs or something to get the antidote to the poison that he gave you. Like, there was always a way out. And that's even how, like, the character Amanda from the movies, that's how she became a disciple of Saw anyways, because she was put in one of those traps, and she kind of got the lesson and the whole emphasis for the trap, and then a born-again experience and joined him. But, you know, he comes across and he says, you know, I'm just trying to help people, you know, realize what they're doing. But, of course, he does it in, like, a crazy person way.
By ripping their limbs off and...
Yeah, like, he'll, you know, he'll put you...
Skull. Yeah. Great way to teach a lesson.
Well, that's something they'll never forget, right?
Till the very end, yes.
So, also, I chose M. Bison from Street Fighter. You know, again, just another kind of straight-ahead villain, you know, kind of the villain that you would expect. You know, the guy that goes around and causing terror and wreaking havoc and, you know, becoming, you know, an unstoppable force that everybody has to team up against. And, you know, I always took a lot of satisfaction from beating M. Bison, you know, especially in the Street Fighter 2 days. Yeah, just beating M. Bison just felt awesome.
Especially with Super Street Fighter 4, I mean, just a really great revival of the series.
Okay, I think I have played that for Xbox. Did it come out like a couple of years ago?
Maybe. Well, they had different iterations. They've had Street Fighter 4, Super Street Fighter 4, and Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition.
Yeah, you can skip the Arcade Edition. I mean, it's basically four new characters. I don't know if there's any new stages, but I mean, you know, the four new characters are nothing of consequence.
But, I mean, he took a particular sinister role in Street Fighter 2, which you could pick that up on the PSN or, you know, Xbox Live, pretty cheap. Or even, you know, pick it up retro for, like, the SNES or Genesis.
Ooh, I should do that.
Yeah, you know, he's the end boss, and he takes, like, a particular, like I said, particularly sinister role in that. It was just awesome. All right, so let's move on to something a little meaty in general, and that is with the rumors that have been circulating recently about the Nintendo investors urging the company to move to the iOS platform. And I think they mean just mobile platforming in general as it pertains to iOS and Android and those types of platforms. We all know that Nintendo has been under quite a bit of financial stress recently, especially with the failed launch of the 3DS and having to take a major price cut less than a year after the product has been released. And a lot of people are saying that the company would see a lot more sales and improve their financial figures moving to the iOS platform. So why don't you start us off, Slacker, and let us know, what do you think? Do you think this is a good idea?
Well, first of all, actually, let me ask a question. Is this basically, what games are they porting to iOS? Are they, like, re-releases? Are they new games? Are they, what are they?
I would assume that they would start out with releasing older titles to the iOS, but eventually moving to developing titles for the iOS.
Well, I mean, I kind of feel like on some level that it's sort of admitting failure, because then basically, you know, they're putting their games on the iOS, and now they no longer have basically the 3DS, the Wii U, they're no longer exclusive. And so it's going to cost them in hardware sales, because there's a group of people that already have the iOS and not want to buy Nintendo because they can already get the games.
Well, let's assume that we're talking about, like, classic games like Super Mario 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
Do you think that that would be helpful in general and not detrimental to the sales of newer systems?
Yeah, you can make a case for that. I mean, you know, but I'm kind of mixed because Nintendo really hasn't, they don't really come up with, like, a lot of new titles anymore. I mean, you know, just when you look, when I looked at the selection for the 3DS, there wasn't a lot in the way of exclusive game titles. And so I kind of feel like even though you're giving retro titles, even though you're putting retro titles on the iOS, it still sort of, you know, hinders the exclusive nature of the platform. Because, you know, you like Super Mario 1, 2, and 3, like, all right, I can get it on, say, my 3DS. But now if I can get it on my iPad, you know, then maybe I really like Super Mario 1, 2, and 3, and there's not really a lot that kind of draws my attention about the 3DS, so maybe that saves me buying a 3DS.
Well, do you think that Super Mario 1, 2, and 3 are selling systems?
Of course not. Of course not. But, you know, there isn't much in the way of the 3DS that is. You know, and that's, I think, what part of the problem is that there's not, like, I mean, you know, with the Vita, the PlayStation Vita that's coming out, you have a new Uncharted title coming out at launch. And Uncharted is a title that everybody identifies that at the launch of PlayStation, at the launch of Vita, like, say you buy the Vita for this game.
Right. But here we'd be talking about a retro title and something that came out 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
Right.
And, you know, I don't think that Super Mario 1, 2, or 3, or all of them, are going to sell somebody on buying a 3DS alone.
Right, and that's kind of my point, is that, you know, there's not a lot of exclusive content for the 3DS, and then, so if you're giving away, you know, not giving away, but if you're putting those games on other systems, you're sort of limiting the exclusive nature of the 3DS. You can get that experience elsewhere.
Yeah, but at what cost are you withholding that particular content? I mean, yeah, it'll take away from the exclusive nature of the 3DS, but it's not making you money now. Hmm. And if you move that over to an iOS, it's going to bring it to a new audience, and it's going to give people an opportunity to play your games. And I think that it would counteract the non-exclusive nature of the 3DS for those particular games would be counteracted by the quote-unquote advertising of these titles on a different platform now.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, but I mean, how would you see, I mean, basically, do you think that they should eat the cost of the 3DS? I mean, like, basically just sort of admit that the 3DS is not what they thought it would be, and then, you know, just start trying to get profit from elsewhere?
Well, they're already eating it. I mean, and especially now that they had the price drop. You know, they're eating at least $80 off of every unit sold, probably more. So, I mean, that's what's putting them in these financial straits to begin with. You know, and these investors are saying, well, you have this whole this back catalog of games that aren't doing anything right now. So why don't you put them on a different platform and see what happens? So why don't we get your thoughts on the idea, Trevor? What do you think about this?
I think that it would expand Nintendo's reach. When Sega failed with the Dreamcast, they gave up on platforms entirely, and they became a pretty successful publishing company. So I don't think, game creator, I guess they started sending their products out to Nintendo and whatnot, but I don't think that it's accepting defeat at all for the 3DS. Nintendo, with the 3DS, they should have, well in advance, created exclusive games and prepared exclusive games and new titles to carry the new platform or the new item. Not to mention that the DS, released shortly beforehand, was already successful, and they didn't need to one up that so soon. They probably should have waited. But I think this backlog is really a treasure trove for Nintendo. I think they could completely expand their market to new people, younger people who maybe never had the chance to experience Nintendo or an NES, and they'll actually have the opportunity to play. So it's almost like a word of mouth marketing scheme, but it's also a great way for people to play these games again. It's very hard to get your hands on an old cartridge of an old classic without having to fish out a lot of money. And if you could spend $6.99 or $9.95 on your iPad device and get an old classic game, then I think that's a wonderful thing. And to comment on the issue that you mentioned about eating the costs, they should eat the costs. When Xbox first came out, it was very shaky. People didn't like it. And what they did is they held out and they built a better system to replace it. If you go to the store today, you can't find an old Xbox game in Walmart. You can find PS2 games because PS2 is still selling strong. But the original Xbox was not that strong, but they improved upon it, and they came out with a better system. So I think they should eat the costs, hold out. Eventually, every single child on the street has a 3DS. Every other kid who doesn't have it is going to want it, and they can, and it will be a success. But that's the same with PS2. That's the same with PS3. PS3, I don't think, reached their – they didn't break even until a year or two ago. So it's not just, oh, they failed because it didn't sell right away. They got to work hard at it. And if they have to make some extra money, or they have to start licensing their thousands of games out to Apple or Android or whoever, you know, whoever the heck wants them, they should. I don't think it's a bad idea.
All right. So what do you think, Goji? What do you think on the topic?
I absolutely think that Nintendo should eat the cost. I mean, Sony ate the cost of the PS3 for a while, but how well they're doing. But also just to be able to sort of have things like old classics like Space Invaders or Tetris, like an actual Nintendo release Tetris, or, you know, play some sort of, you know, Rabbids version. I think it would do a lot for Nintendo's pocketbooks, you know, so they don't go the way of BlackBerry.
Well, do you think that releasing their older video games would undermine the success of the 3DS?
No, because I think there's sort of a market for both. I mean, there's people who grew up with that, who that was like their first introduction to video games. And as we've seen, there's always a market for retro things. But then, you know, the generations that didn't grow up with it, they can sort of have the best of, you know, everyone can have the best of both worlds, basically.
Yeah, you see, the way that I see it is that, given the current financial situation of Nintendo in general, they don't have a lot of money in the bank. And especially since this 3DS is tanking, and they had to make some pretty drastic moves in hopes that it's going to sell more units, you know, they need to do something to make more money if they want to exist as a company. And, you know, we know what happened with Sega, that as soon as the Dreamcast failed, they said, we're out of hardware and we're continuing with software, and then licensed everything that they had to the other systems. And, you know, this isn't really that drastic of a move for Nintendo to, you know, sell some things on iOS. And they don't necessarily have to be full-featured games or, you know, anything like that. It's just getting your brands out to the public. And especially if you're going to sell older titles, you know, like regular Nintendo games, and just port them to the iOS, that's like a whole new cash stream to bring money into Nintendo. Because, you know, people aren't, you know, going out of their way to buy, you know, Super Mario Brothers 2 or 3 or Metroid or whatever on, you know, Nintendo's WiiWare. And, you know, speaking of the Wii, I think that everybody that was buying Wiis like 5 years ago are the owners of iPads and iPhones right now. And I think Nintendo would be following the audience that made them popular to the iOS. So what do you think, Slacker? Do you agree with what I said?
Yeah, I mean, I do know quite a few people that have Wiis that also have either iPads or Macs. So there's definitely a market for that. It's definitely sounding like, I mean, you know, in my opinion, you know, eat the cost of the 3DS, you know, and then move on elsewhere. I mean, you've got all this stuff that's basically already developed, and you might as well use it, so.
But as far as porting the games themselves, you know, forget about the hardware side of it and having to to try to solve their financial problems by eating the system. I'm just saying, like, as far as moving their games to a different platform and creating a new revenue stream, if that's going to ultimately be a successful strategy, or if that's going to undermine what they're trying to do with Nintendo as a brand.
I mean, at this point, see, I had a change of heart. I think it's the way to go. I mean, I think that you're sitting on all this stuff that's already developed, and you're kind of furthering your reach. You're on another platform here, and you can make a little bit more money with it.
What about you, Trevor? Anything to add?
I completely agree. It's a natural progression. I do know people who own, an iPad and a Wii. Wii tends to appeal to older people with a lot of the, Wii Fit and Wii Cook and all kinds of games like that. So it tends to appeal to that more upscale, market. But I think that it's no more delegitimizing than Blizzard having games on the Apple Store or Activision having games on there. Why not have a serious contender come on board and have their games? You know, why not add their voice to this emerging market? And I don't see too many pitfalls. I don't see too many downfalls to any of this, especially if it's older games, if it's old content that already exists that there's a demand for, and maybe there isn't a demand until it's there. And we'll know better once it's on there how well it sells, how well it does. But I think if anything, it's going to complement the Nintendo brand. It's going to give credibility to the gaming, kind of the gaming world on the iOS, because right now it's kind of hokey with Angry Birds and just all these other kind of stupid viral things that people play on the iOS. But now they'll say, hey, did you play Super Mario Brothers 2? Hey, did you play this? Did you do this? So I think it'll legitimize that emerging industry, because it really is a new industry. And maybe they can take control of it, take the reins.
So what's your final word, OG? What do you have to add?
I have a Mac, but I don't have a Wii. So I personally think that Nintendo's big mistake was shunning their hardcore gamer fans.
So you ultimately think that this would further the brand itself?
Yeah, in the beginning they're all like, hey, we're appealing to moms and casual gamers. And the hardcore gamers were like, oh, well, what about Mario stuff? Nintendo was like, well, we have all these like Paper Mario kind of offerings.
I guess it doesn't cut it.
No. Or like I was saying in our previous podcast, like, who cares about Gordon Ramsay?
I do, actually. That's a different story. I love Gordon Ramsay as a chef, but yeah, go on.
You know what?
Well, but you wouldn't play his video game,
I probably would. If I could listen to his soft, velvety English accent for a couple hours, I think I would play his video game.
You know what? I'm not disputing his, efforts as a chef. I don't think he belongs in a video game system.
Fair enough.
We'll have to agree to disagree.
All right, you take this outside.
Unless he's cooking the Wii, and then I would absolutely see that.
All right, so this is going to bring us to the end of the program. So why don't you start us off, Trevor, and let people know how they can get a hold of you.
Well, you can follow me at Vago Games on Twitter, or you can log on to my site at www.vagogames.com.
And what about you, OG?
I can be found on Twitter as Obnoxious Gamer. I can be found on WordPress, obnoxiousgamer.wordpress.com.
And you can find us on Twitter at New Gamer Nation. You can visit our website at newgamernation.com. And you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/newgamernations. Please be sure to go to the Android Marketplace and download our new app. It'll give you access to everything that we put on the site, as well as listening to this podcast. Everything is up there, and it's absolutely free. And also, please go to our iTunes page and rate and leave a comment for us on iTunes. It helps us out quite a bit and gets the word out about the show. Again, I'd like to thank our guests, Trevor and OG, for coming on to the show today. I'd like to thank everybody for listening in, and we will see you next week. Take care.